The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 24, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you all on this threatening day. There's supposed to be snow by the end of this talk this morning, I guess. Well, this morning, I'm going to talk about happiness. I just finished a class, many of you were in it. It was titled Mind and Consciousness, a No-Brainer. And in preparing for that class, I do this anyway, but I just check in and see what the latest discussions and thinking is around the topic of mind and consciousness really, because that's the word that is constantly used. It's overworked. Anyway, so I had this class, Mind and Consciousness, a No-Brainer. And in digging around for, I wasn't searching to find things to talk about. I had plenty of my own, but I just like to check in to see where people are with this kind of thinking and research, and in doing that, I stumbled on a fellow. I get on and check out various talks and things, or interviews, and there was this fellow who I hadn't encountered before. I was kind of surprised, or maybe I hadn't, it didn't register. His name is Alex O'Connor, a very young man. Actually, when I tuned into the interview, I thought he was almost like, like a high school kid or something, but very learned and very well read, and he's got a PhD in philosophy and a number of other credentials. So I was rather impressed with what he had to say and how articulate he was about what he was talking about. And the title of his talk, that's what caught my eye, where I clicked on it and to check it out, see what it was. And the title was Morality Can't Be Objective. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I mean, he's correct, yes. Morality can't be objective. The problem with that, for most of us then, probably, though it's not said, but the assumption might be that morality is subjective. But that's also not correct. Well, be uncovering this in the talk. But morality can't be objective. And in it, he gave this example of, I should say this too, that he says that morality is twofold. One is that we must have some sense of, or that morality has something to do with what is good and what is bad. So this is what morality entails. So we must have some sense of this, that there is good, there are good things in the world, and then there are bad things. That's one aspect. And the other one is that we must have some, well, moral agency here. We must have some sense of ought, moral ought, that we ought to do what is good, and we ought to not do what is bad. So he's saying these are two aspects of this morality. And then he gave this little story of how, like, and this is why I think it came up on my computer when I was checking all things regarding consciousness and that sort of thing. Because he gets into this story about, or this example of how a computer or a robot can't be a moral agent because it's just acting out according to its what it's programmed for. Even if it's programmed to do good, it's just acting for the good because it's been programmed this way. But that doesn't make it a moral agent, because to be a moral agent, you would have to have some sense that that there is what we would call good and there is what we would call bad, and that we ought to do that which is good. And the robot doesn't think in terms of that there's good or bad. It's not what's motivating him. it, I should say, maybe. Nor does it have any sense of ought, moral ought, that we ought to do what is good. Okay, well, what I find interesting about this, if we're confused on this issue, it will be very difficult for us to really find true happiness. And we are confused on this issue, and the confusion is right here. It's right there in that very first sentence when he says that morality has two aspects to it. One is that there are good things in the world and that there are bad things. Okay, that there is good and there is bad. And then the next one is moral ought. We ought to do that which is good and ought not to do that which is bad. We're right there with number one, that there are good things in the world and there are bad things. This is just simply wrong. Even though most of us think this way, we act out of this. We create religions and philosophies and that will point this out to us. And then it'll start listing, well, the things that are good and the things that are bad. And then we ought to do, because to complete this, we ought to do that which is good. Whether we're commanded this by some authority of some sort, a very poor structure for morality, for a moral system, or in any other way whatsoever, because we've reasoned it out, as philosophers and theologians would do and have over centuries, never arriving at any satisfactory understanding of this that we can all agree upon and act out of and live out of. So a real problem here. And I said, without resolving this, yeah, we can be happy to some degree, you know, but then what even makes us happy? What makes Donald Trump happy? Is that what makes you happy or other people happy? People can be happy or saddened by any number of things. But if we're looking at it, this in terms of good and bad, this doesn't get resolved. But this problem can be resolved totally. That's what I want to help you with this morning and point this out. It can be resolved totally, but not by our usual way of going about this. So what is wrong with this thing about what that there are some good things? Well, I wanted to say this, this young fellow, Alex O'Connor, in writing this out, and there's two aspects. There's that there are good things and that there are bad things. But I wanted to say, if I had him in front of me, I would just tell him the story of the wise Chinese farmer. Most of you probably know that story. I've told it many times. For those of you who don't, I'll just very quickly, it's a story, it's a Taoist story of a Chinese farmer who, his horse runs away. And then his neighbor comes to, you know, commiserate and say, oh, that's too bad, you know, that's bad, you know, your horse ran away. And then the next day the horse comes back with some other horses. The neighbor comes, oh, that's good. But every time the neighbor says good or bad, the farmer says, who can say what's good or bad? This is profound. I would suggest that you contemplate this and think about it, come back to this, maybe for the rest of your life, if you can remember this. Who can say what is good or bad? The story goes on, of course, in the farmer's son breaks his leg trying to ride one of the new horses. And then the neighbor said, well, that's bad. And then the army's coming through to conscript young men for the war or whatever's going on. And they pass over the Chinese farmer's son because he has a broken leg, you know. And it just goes on like this. But every time the farmer says, who can say? This is the key to the whole issue of morality right there, is to understand this, that we cannot say what is good. In the end, you cannot say what is good. I mentioned recently, maybe it was my last talk, I don't remember, but you know, how my father died when I was 6 years old. died suddenly, unexpectedly. And he was only 42 at the time. I was 6, and a brother 8, and a brother almost 18 at that point. And we can say, well, of course, this was bad. I wouldn't wish this on my father or my mother or my brothers or myself or my relatives and friends. It was a sad thing and a shocking thing for the family and all of that. But is that bad? Because I'm quite sure that I wouldn't be sitting here in front of you now and having lived and learned the life that I've had, had that event not occurred. Now, I don't know, is this good? I'm very happy to arrive at the understanding that's with me now, but this might not have occurred because of just that one event. And of course, there's many other events along the way that shape us and turn us, and, you know, with the Chinese farmers' twist and turns of events. But who can say among these things which is what's good here and what's bad? But life is filled. You have these experiences too. And when we try to bring about the good, well, your good might not be what I think of as good. And we can fight over it individually or form groups of various kinds, and then we'll fight each other as groups, and even then fighting within, all over this issue of what we believe, what we think is good or what is bad, or what I want or what I don't want. It's just endless with us, and it is total insanity. It's really insanity. It's being out of touch and not aware of what is actually taking place and what the nature of this reality is, which is not of that nature. Well, this is good and that is bad, and yeah, we ought to do what is good and ought to avoid what is bad and that sort of thing. That just perpetuates the misery and the confusion, the hatred and the anger and the frustration that envelops human life far too much. There is a way out of this, though. There is a way to see through this, because we're not behaving, when we adhere to ideas and rules like this, we're not adhering to what is ultimately real. The nature of the world isn't such that it is of that structure, that there are things that are good and then there are things that are bad. You can't really say which is which. It keeps changing in all sorts of levels. So we just can't. So we need to see that this doesn't provide us with a foundation for morality or to live lives of, well, happiness that are worth living completely, totally, to their end, if there is an end, and I don't think so. But if we keep hanging to these notions of what is good without really seeing that you can't form a basis for this, you can't find any ground to this. And we even find this in Buddhism. Some translations of, say, the Dhammapada, I think I have one translation where it talks about sin and something. Well, that's a Christian notion. Sin is to act against God, to act not according to God's law or something like that. Well, that's a Christian idea, or a Judeo-Christian idea. But it's not what the awakened teach. Still, it creeps into Buddhism as well, because we all have a tendency to see things in these terms. And it's how we're reacting to it personally and emotionally and other sorts of ways. That, yeah, but this is a good thing, and I should do that. You know, but even though I really want to do this. And then sometimes we can just get rebellious and defiant, and I don't care about that, I'm just going to do what I want. Or we think, oh, I really should do this, and we're struggling with it inside of ourselves because our temptation to veer off from that. Or when we do, even I don't know, accidentally, not deliberately anyway. And we can feel guilty for all sorts of, it's just nothing but problems that we create for ourselves, and it doesn't resolve the issue of how might we live our lives that's in complete harmony with reality, with other people, with the earth, all of this. How can we how can we find this way and live out of this? And it won't be through rules and regulations, because who's going to make the rules? What was that based on? Other people have different rules and see a different way. That doesn't get us out of the problem. But there is a way out of the problem. And I'll tell you now, I've said this many times before, but rather than seeing things in terms of good and bad, or good or bad, good or evil, just set all that aside. You don't get rid of it. It's a very common, normal way for us to maybe understand the world. You can't get rid of that exactly. By itself, it isn't going to cause us trouble as long as we don't think that I must follow that way. There is another way. It's, in some ways, people can confuse it with that way. That's so confusing and hurtful. But rather than seeing things in terms of good or bad, good and evil, where we have things setting out there on a balance scale, we can see things in terms of wholeness. And we can realize that understanding wholeness and seeing wholeness, it isn't to be acting from some particular point of view, some favored position or something like this, and to correct something else over there, or all the various things we do, or building strategies to claim all of that over there that those people have, they don't have any right to this, mine, God gave that to me, and all kinds of views like this. That you'll never get out of. We never get out of that. We've been locked in this kind of thinking, the vast majority of us, certainly in Western culture, but I think elsewhere, since time immemorial. But there is a way out of this. And it's really to, first of all, to see the limitations of that ordinary, I don't want to use the word dualistic, but that ordinary, because that gets overused too, but that ordinary way of, and it's so quick and easy just to see things in those terms. So the teaching of the awaken is not exactly Buddhism. Buddhism, that's a Western term that was put on Buddha Dharma, that make Buddhism into another ism and treat it as if it's a belief system. Though there are many people who follow this way, and have even outside of Western culture for millennia, who might think in these terms, because it's so easy for us to do that. But what the awakened teach, Buddha Dharma is the teaching of the awakened. Dharma's teaching, Buddha, the awakened. What the awakening that the Buddha had and that others have had, both before and after the historical Buddha that we know, is realizing the whole. We're not losing sight of the whole. Those who are awake in this moment, when there's awakeness, this is within sight of the whole, or what is, and it's not an object. It's not some particular thing or some particular point of view. It is wholeness. It is totality. It is embracing everything, including the evil that might appear here and there, the things that we will label evil and fight over and argue whether that's evil or is that good and you're evil. There's a way to realize this wholeness. This is reality. It is in wholeness. It is in totality. When I was teaching the course a few weeks ago on mind and consciousness, I was pointing out that mind is the way I would speak of mind. The way Wang Po, when he speaks of, he says there's only the one mind, besides which nothing is. He's talking about totality. And with this in mind, you're going to behave differently than you would if you're still seeing things in dualistic terms. I wrote about this in my book, Buddhism Plain and Simple, that you might wonder, well, how can I possibly see the whole? Well, you can't as an object. That's not what we're talking about here. This is the kind of seeing where I would italicize it if I were writing it. It's a different kind of seeing. It is actually your perceptual experience. It's not even really that. It's not your perceptual experience. But it is perceptual experience, which is available to all of us. You can't be apart from this. But the pure perceptual experience is before we get ideas, before we conceptualize the experience. And now we're seeing in terms of good and bad, and good and evil, and this sort of thing. And what is happening, and this is what you can read, you can't see the whole. But what you can see is your mind reacting to that. Consciousness is understood in this teaching as that which is breaking up this experience. It's drawing distinctions between this and that. And now there can be a sense of myself here and all of that out there. And there will be a sense of myself being drawn to this and repelled from that and this sort of thing. Through the process of the conceptualizing, we start making ideas and building stories and themes, you know, to back up the ideas and the things that we're feeling about all of this. Not realizing that it is all mind. And it is of this one nature. And that these are these distinctions that are drawn. And then it starts to look like I'm drawing it, you're drawing, we're making these distinctions. Yeah, well, but also just the you and the me is already something drawn. And we don't even realize that. And the things that get drawn become very solid and real, substantial to us. And we're reacting to that, getting more embroiled in that if we're not aware of what we're doing. It isn't like that's evil and bad and we should stop doing that and stop having ideas and concepts and dreams and beliefs. And that's all fine if as long as we don't lose sight of the whole. We don't lose sight of the true nature of what is appearing here. This is what we need to do. And the way to notice when you're caught by that is not seeing the whole, or you know, you're not seeing an object of any kind. The way to realize when you're getting caught in the delusion or the illusory world and forming deluded thoughts and ideas about it, the way to watch that, you can see, you can detect this. It's not that difficult, but it's certainly something you can exercise more and more until it becomes stronger and more with you. But you can see your mind leaning. First of all, there's you formed. It's a very strong sense of you or me. You know, and then the inclinations toward this and away from that. And again, when that's taking place, it's so easy that immediately we'll conceptualize it and we'll think, well, that's not good then, that my mind is leaning. Yeah, but that's another constructed thing. You need to realize the nature of this, drawing these distinctions, and how subtle it is and how quick it is. The awakened aren't telling us, this is good, you should, because we're back to good and bad now. You should watch your mind, and when you see it's leaning, then no, that's not good, so you pull it back. Well, you can't even do that. I can't do it either. You can't pull your mind back to full upright, you know, where you're not leaning at all, where you're morally upright and all of this. What you can do, though, is see, just simply see. Not grasp, not think, not get ideas, not struggle with or evaluate and put things back into terms of good and bad and that sort of thing. As we're wont to do, that's where we go. It's so easy. So it's a matter of just noting that. And at some point, we can begin to see that the very fabric of reality itself is of a nature that is ungraspable. In this way, it is reflecting or pointing to whatever. It is of the whole, which cannot be grasped, though it can be realized. It can be seen. But it shows up in the broken out variations and versions and entities and things that are appearing here. It shows up in this way, but it is, if you look very carefully at any given little piece you want to take from that, and you look and you'll find the whole within every little piece of it, because this whole is thoroughgoing, and it's a matter of understanding its nature, and that it is always just simply thus. It is our mind, our personal mind, our selfish mind, that will exhibit this leaning. And again, don't try to straighten that up. How are you going to do that? That's just more leaning, because now you desire to straighten it up. So I must straighten it. I want it. It's the same mind that you're trying to escape from. Just recognize how it operates. This is very subtle, but we can learn to just sit down, quiet our minds, and as I say, watch your mind. I only say watch. I don't say do anything about it. Just watch your mind. And begin to lean less. But again, don't say, oh, good, well, now I think I'm leaning less. All of that stuff, just stop all of it. Stop the commentary, the ideas that I should do this, this would be good if I did this. No, nobody's saying that. It's not good if you wake up. It's not good if your mind stops leaning. It's not, you know, because the moment you cast it into terms like that, well, you're right back to the ordinary mind again. So this is very simple. Intellectually, there's nothing required of your intellect. That's why Dogen says, cease from practice based on intellectual understanding. You know, you have your ideas, your thoughts, beliefs. You're reading Dogen and saying, well, okay, so he's saying this or that. Don't do that. Just see what he has to say. You don't need to grasp it. Because the moment you grasp it, you've formed an idea, and then you might reject it, or you might really fall in love with it, or you might be just neutral about it and go on your merry way. But just recognize all this is. Awakening is nothing more than recognizing, not so much that the world is broken up in that way, but there's this tendency to lean, to go toward or away. And that the world will unfold just like it did for the wise Chinese farmer. The world is coming and presenting us with this. Oh, that's unfortunate. That's bad, you know. And we could react in this way. Or you just say, well, who can say? Is this a good thing? Who can say? Of course, in the immediacy of some little thing that's happening here, there are things that can be very hurtful and all of that. And unjust and all that. But we, again, if you grasp that and struggle, now you're going to try to fix that, you're going to perpetuate it. And you're going to perpetuate your confusion about it. It's a matter of just stepping back. It is going to be out of the hole where this gets settled and dissipated. But of course, there'll be more things forming here and there. But that's not... You can't do that. I can't. We can't even team up as a the whole human community and try to bring things about in any particular direction. Ultimately, it won't work. But we can learn to take our hands off of things, less control. Yeah, that's all we need to do. You have to control a few things, like, you know, maybe cooking your dinner or something. That's going to involve you controlling certain things. But keep it small. Keep it limited. When it comes to controlling other people or steering them around or something like this, you better be careful there, including yourself, too. I've sometimes, you know, when I was the head teacher here, I'd hear things would get back to me about, how Steve wants this, or he wants us to do that, or, but you don't understand. It isn't that I want something here from you or for the center or whatever. It is just looking at those kinds of practices and activities and things that we can do that would be more conducive to or letting our minds settle a bit and make it more easily that we might get some glimmerings of the whole and how it is always acting and present with everything that we do, which is the opposite of me acting out of my will and what it is that I want you to do or us to do or something like that. It was never that way. I'd watch myself to make sure that I wasn't entering into it. To be honest, it never was there very much. I didn't particularly want anything with this center, but just to let it grow, let it be here, not try to control too much. A few things here and there might be helpful, but always watching, because if it looks like it's not helping much, well, maybe we can back off of that. Don't be attached to any rule I might have set up or others thought were good. Some things, you know, we could try. So it isn't like, what I'm trying to say here is that it isn't like that you don't do anything in the sense of, here we are as human beings in this world, you know, there's things we need to do. But it's always a matter of watching your own mind in the actions that are taking place here and what might be appropriate, say, for the center or things that are involving other people and stuff like that. And if you see something coming up out of your own ego, your own point of view, your own, you know, what I want personally from, recognize that. And as best you can, don't act out of that, but just continue to watch it. You can ask yourself, what would be most helpful here for us here as a group, you know, as a whole? Two, just one thing, just to settle our minds, to wake up and to remove the encumbrances of getting too involved with this kind of behavior or activity or the robes and whatever. Just don't go too far. And of course, it doesn't mean to stop that. That's still carrying on in the same way. Just now you're going in the opposite direction. Just stop it all. Learn to observe. This is the ticket to happiness. And it won't be a ha-ha kind of happy or, boy, this is like we can have a party every day kind of happy. It's a deep, quiet contentedness, I guess. I don't know what to say. It is not the torment of trying to get your way. Okay, well, maybe I've said enough about that this morning. Any questions about what I had to say today? Yes, David.
Question or more comment. One thing we can see is what causes suffering. And we can avoid that.
Yes, well, we can't see specifically what is causing the suffering, but that acting out of the intent or the trying to control and this sort of thing, that is the suffering right there. And
we can see that.
Oh, yeah, and we certainly can feel it. But we can realize it. We can see it with an underlined word "see." I would underline. Yeah, it's we already see the nature of reality. If that were not the case, then we couldn't wake up. But we already see this. We already know this, even. But we're so easily caught by the objects that are appearing in our minds, as though they can't be ignored. And don't do that either, you know, because here they are. They're showing up, this and then that, not just people and objects and things like that, but thoughts and feelings. So we don't ignore any of that, because you can't. It would be to live like an insane person if you did. But we can keep ever mindful of its nature, and that there isn't anything here that is anything unto itself. Its self nature is with the whole, not with the individuated thing, whatever it might be, that we're focusing on. So we can see that, and we can know that and realize that, and we can. But what we need to do is to be aware of how we get caught in this when we don't see through it. We don't see through the emptiness of the various form things, not the nothingness of it, because this is not nothing. But it is of a nature that we really can't get hold of. Even the stuff that appears like we can get hold of, the different ideas and thoughts and feelings, but objects and people and stuff like this, and ourselves, it seems like we can get hold of these things. But if you just continue to look, what have you gotten hold of? And for that matter, what is the you that seems to have gotten hold of something? There is immediately just this, the full, vibrant reality of it all, right here, in totality. And this is what you are, if we have to single out a you or a me, you know. But this is what we are. We're not living our own lives. We're living the life of the whole. And to the extent that we can realize that and then allow that to modify our behavior or whatever, or just to let go of the things we might otherwise try to do or whatever, we can live in a way that's of the whole without trying to do it, because you can't try to do it, because that's forming something now. So. But if we stop trying to do the things that we're trying to do beyond necessity, you know, like, yes, cook your dinner, whatever. There's plenty of that. But beyond that, watch where your mind now is. I've got to go this way, or your mind is spinning on something, you're obsessed with something, or any number of things there. These are the kinds of things that we can just... remind ourselves of the true nature of what's taking place here. And then you can let that go. Or just let it drop away. Because if you really see through these things, they will, beyond necessity, they will drop away. And they do, in spite of ourselves. You're not the person you were 10 years ago. That's all changed. You didn't control as much of that as you might have thought. Really, you didn't control any of it. But we can either be here with it and knowing what is taking place, or we can just be tossed about and not knowing and obsessing over getting this and running from that. Yeah, so we do have the knowledge, you know, we do see, you know, we do know. We know what suffering, we realize suffering. The Buddha said, I only teach these two things. There's suffering and there's a release from suffering. There's dukkha and release from dukkha. And that's what it comes down to. I was calling it that release, I was calling happiness. But you won't find a thing that will make you happy, maybe momentarily, temporarily. And then when the thing breaks or it goes away, somebody steals it, whatever, no, where's the happiness? Now there's a disturbance there that wouldn't have been there had you not attached in the first place, you know. But we can just see it. So it isn't like, well, that was bad, then you shouldn't attach. No, just observe. And realize the nature of what's unfolding here. And you'll be engaged with it. You can hardly help but do that. But we don't have to be engaged in a way that perpetuates our confusion and our envy, our anger, or, you know, or even our lusting after, or getting overly excited about this or that, which is only going to disappear anyway. Now there's the sadness. You know. Just see it. Live it as it comes and as it goes, and just live accordingly. With this, and with regard for the whole, that is regard for others as well, we can begin to live in peace and harmony with others, not just those around us, but even in this world at large. And the various creatures, more than just the humans on this planet, there's all kinds of, from the little microbes all the way up to the, what is it, the blue whale, which I think is the largest creature that ever lived, and everything in between. So, but it's just live with an open heart. So I don't know, did that help, David? Yeah. Anything else? Anything on Zoom? Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.